head coach of the Western Kentucky Hilltoppers, Jeff Ross. Today I'm with Matt Jones, Kevin Harnett, Pat Forty. I'm with Anoush Sariat, Kristen Wall, United States Congressman John Yarman, Sarah Bohanter, and
welcome to the Rusty Satellite Show with your host, Rick Redding. The show airs every week exclusively here on the Louisville.am Podcast Network. Rick's ready to start ranting and raving about his hometown right now. So here's Rick.
And you have successfully downloaded the Rusty Satellite Show, home of the most interesting people in the Ville. This is your host, Rick Redding. This podcast is a labor of love for me, and it is the longest running and most interesting podcast in the city. So says I. And you know, who's going to dispute that? I tell you, I have a great show for you today. I have fulfilled my mission of bringing you some of the most interesting people in the Ville. In the second part of the show, I have a pioneer in the world of internet, a guy named Drew Curtis. You may remember that number because that name because he ran for governor last year. I sure wish he'd have won. He's much sharper than that guy. We're going to talk about in a few minutes that is currently our governor. But first up in the show, I'm going to have Reverend Joe Phelps, who is the pastor at Highland Baptist Church. I met him for the first time today and very impressed. I always thought I'd heard about him and heard about the inclusiveness of his church and the efforts he has made to reach out to the African-American community, and I wanted to talk to him, so I called him up and went over there with photographer Bill Breimer, and we had a great conversation. I think you're going to find that to be very interesting in terms of somebody that's really trying to do some good in the world and good in with the city's most pressing problem, which is violence in the West End. I really do. So I hope you'll stay tuned for that. First off, I want to mention my sponsors, and they are, first of all, my good friends at the Eye Care Institute at 502. You can call them at 502-589-1500. Any sort of regular vision need you have, just need to get your eyes checked, or if you need something more serious like LASIK, they are the experts. They're the ones that know everything about the eye, and I encourage you to go down there to Butchertown and make an appointment. Also, my other sponsor, and I'm going to say a few things about Passport Health Plans today, because first of all, Mark Carter, the president and CEO, has a very interesting op-ed in the Courier Journal this week about the company's move down to the West End. I think it's very well written and well done by Mark. And secondly, I have a piece in Insider Louisville about opioid addiction, and it features Rex Chapman. And Rex Chapman, the former UK basketball star, he is really on a campaign on this. I'm really impressed with his actions. He has written a column, if you go to SI.com and Sports Illustrated, talking about the problem of opioid addiction. And I think it's really interesting and great that, you know, Rex has overcome his problem after a long, long battle with addiction to painkillers. And he has a very interesting story. You did hear it as Rex was, you could look that up on the Rusty Satellite Show archives. Rex was a guest on this show around Derby time this year, as he was in town to do some stuff for the Healing Place. So just want to point out some cool things to look at or to wander into as you do your search around the internet for interesting things to read. So anyway, there's a lot of great news stories going on right now in Louisville, stuff that I'm going to talk about in the next part of the show. But first up, I'm going to share with you my talk with Joe Phelps. And, you know, it became a big deal. The real thing that happened was Governor Bevin came in and gathered a bunch of people in the West End proclaiming that, you know, he had some solution to the problem of violence. And then when he came down and gathered all those people together, he said the solution, among other things, was to pray. And then Bevin, this outraged some people in the audience, especially some of the pastors, including Reverend Joe Phelps, who wrote an editorial in the Courier Journal with the headline, "Yes, I'm ashamed of Christianity." In terms of what the governor did, it was just awful. And then the worst thing he did was when people reacted negatively, Bevin took to his favorite tactic, went straight to YouTube and criticized members of the media and the pastors, saying that they all hated God and hated his administration. I kid you not, this is our sitting governor, who many of you voted for, saying these things. It's just appalling and embarrassing to me. And anyway, so I wanted to get somebody to talk with about that. And Joe Phelps is the perfect person, and he is a fascinating guy. This isn't the first time he's been involved in efforts to be more inclusive, and I asked him about that in the interview, which I think you'll enjoy. So listen up, and I'll be back with more.
I had no use for health insurance, but my mom was always saying, sign up for Passport. And I was like, Mom. She was like, for my peace of mind. It got to be where I needed peace of mind, so I did. Now my mom, she can chill, and I feel pretty good about it too.
Together we can all feel better. Call 1-800-578-0603 and ask for Passport. That's 1-800-578-0603. Passport Health Plan, working together for a healthier Kentucky.
Today I am in the offices of Reverend Joe Phelps at Highland Baptist Church. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm honored to be asked to be part of this.
Well, this is great. And I was very interested in reading about your background and all the things that you do. You got a lot of media attention the last couple of weeks. So let's just start off talking about that. You wrote an editorial that was basically critical of the governor, and the headline was, Yes, I'm Embarrassed for Christianity. Explain to me, our audience, what was behind that.
Sure. That was a line that I said immediately after coming out of the meeting that was held by the governor. It was supposed to be a conversation with senior pastors about violence, a solution for violence in West Louisville. And his only solution that was presented that morning was prayer walks. And that felt to me like an invasive and kind of a condescending response from someone who doesn't live in West Louisville, who doesn't know that there are prayer walks happening practically every night, that there have been people, black and white, who have been working relentlessly in West Louisville, and to come in and not even talk to us and dialogue with us before presenting this solution, I felt like, and especially since it was all veiled in Christian language, right, as a Christian minister, it felt embarrassing to me.
Yeah. Well, certainly I understand. And the idea that, well, the governor aside, people that I've talked to about it say, yeah, that was embarrassing. But for those who are criticizing his approach, what is a better approach? What are other ideas?
Yeah. And I'd like to say, I'm sorry if that offended people of goodwill who really want to come and learn and pray and walk through West Louisville. I think that's a beautiful thing. 3-4 years ago, I wasn't aware of all the things happening in West Louisville, and so a ride around West Louisville in the car with Dr. Kevin Cosby opened my eyes and began this long journey of racial reconciliation that we've been on. But in those 3 years, we've seen and learned a great deal about the conditions in West Louisville, and we've begun to understand more at a deeper level what are the causes, the roots of some of the violence, the poverty, the hopelessness and helplessness that we find there. And so for us, the solutions include things like empowering the citizens who are there, listening to them, understanding what they perceive to be their need. They've got it's a hugely intelligent and passionate and capable community of leaders in the black community, mm-hmm, in West Louisville. It seems to me unfair to sort of override them or look beyond them for a solution, as if white people are the only ones who have solutions.
Yeah, you come in and save the day. Yeah, I understand. And it seems like the West End really suffers from it. Certainly an image problem with the crime and all that, because I'm experienced with you. I've been down there. I've talked to people down there. Yeah. And it's not dangerous to just drive your car down there.
It's not dangerous. But it is a hugely depleted community of faith or community. As you drive around, you see there aren't really businesses of any substance. They're just small little mom and pop groups that don't have capacity to grow and develop because they don't have the resources. They don't have the backing that we find in other parts of the city.
Right.
So,
Yeah, it's very difficult, and hence the crime.
Yeah, I think it creates a downward spiral, okay, where people who don't have much investment in the community, don't have much to lose, their life has little value to them. They start doing things that do bring in money but aren't legal, and it's an unfortunate spiral. But I think the thing I've discovered is no one in West Louisville aspires to be unlawful, bad, poor, poor parents, that kind of thing.
Right.
Everyone, we all human beings, we want security and we want joy,
yeah,
in our lives.
Yeah.
And that's what we need to help empower the people of West Louisville to have.
Okay. Well, I want to ask you about this. And you mentioned 3 years ago with Reverend Cosby, but, you know, Highland Baptist Church is right here in the middle of the Highlands. There are a lot of churches around here that don't reach out to the African-American community or even the gay community, which I know you've been very friendly toward. What is it about you and or this church that feels the need to do that?
We read the Bible in a way that allows what I think the teachings of Jesus really are to be at the center of how we shape ourselves. We don't just preach about Jesus, believing in Jesus. We talk about following Jesus. To believe Jesus is to beloved him, to embrace what he embraced. His vision was a world where all are included in God's love, and there's enough for everyone. And not everyone has to walk in lockstep. There's going to be a diversity of people. And that's the way the world was created. If you look at Genesis 1, that's the dream of God. This big, broad, beautiful world where everything works in harmony. So for Highland, it feels sometimes like we are looking through the Bible, but the same Bible that other people are. But when we look at it, we look through the end of the lens that makes God and the world get bigger and more inclusive. Whereas others look at this through the lens and they're looking in the opposite direction. It's like looking through binoculars where if you look through the wrong end, things get smaller,
sure,
and more exclusive. And to me, that may be part of our problem. We see God differently, or we interpret Scripture differently. We're using the same words, same languages, same symbols, but we come to a different conclusion. And it's haughty to think we're right and they're wrong, but all we can do is follow the shape of our obedience.
Sure. Well, speaking of right and wrong, I promise not to ask you to get all over the governor, but I do want to ask you about one thing he said.
Okay.
One thing he said. He came out on YouTube, and he said that those who mock my plan for prayer walks, that those people, quote, hate God and this administration.
Yeah.
That must not have made you feel good.
Well, it makes me feel bad for him and for all who follow him, that they would perceive us that way. I've never met the governor. He's probably apparently a nice man. He seems like a good father. I'm sure he's a good churchman. Our politics are different, but I feel like he took this personally when I wasn't questioning his faith, his Christianity. I don't question prayer. I pray. That's why I don't listen to podcasts. I do a lot of praying. I'm not mocking any of that. I'm just inviting him, calling him to be the governor, to help us with the resources. We've been praying, and we think he's the answer, one of the answers to our prayer, is to help us with some resources in West Louisville that can empower people and let them thrive and be the people God wants them to be.
Okay. And when you talk, and I know this is probably the biggest societal issue in Louisville, the violence in the West End, which goes to a lot of things. And I know you know the mayor, and I mean, what resources do you think really need to come to help start solving this problem?
Well, I think we need to find ways to empower the black community, to get black businesses, the black media, black churches, black families to be able to work together in harmony, and they don't have the same resources that most white Americans have. They don't have that inherited wealth that many of us grew up with. You know, my parents weren't rich, but when they died, they left me a little bit of money that I could do things with. they don't. People in West Louisville don't necessarily have that. They start life way behind. I think that's not fair. I think it's because of a lot of things that our government did. Not just people, but our government, which is why the answer has to come from government. It can't just come from the churches.
Sure, sure. Well, certainly that makes sense. I know, you know, for example, you know, just one issue is transportation. You know, we all grow up assuming we're going to have cars and able to get around.
Right.
And that's not a reality.
That is not a reality in West Louisville because they don't have the resources to have a job, to have a car. So if you don't have a car, it's difficult to get to jobs that aren't in West Louisville. Then you're dependent on the public transportation. And we've got a great TARC system in Louisville, but you try getting to work and to where you need to be on time when you've got kids, et cetera. It makes life very, very complicated.
Okay. We've got to wrap up here pretty soon, but I want to ask you about your relationship with those black leaders in West Louisville, starting with Reverend Cosby and all those. They're certainly impassioned. I went to I don't know if you were there, the passport announcement at 18th and Broadway, and those guys stood up and you know they're really passionate about what they have to say. How have you worked in terms of becoming friends and working together with that group?
Well, it's been an evolution. You know, it takes some time to build up trust, mutual trust for each other. We operate differently. Our styles of leadership are different. Our experiences are different. One of the things I've had to do is go in as a student, not as the teacher. I've had to go in with a lot of humility to say, I certainly have no idea what the solutions are in West Louisville because I don't live in West Louisville. Dr. Cosby was born and raised in West Louisville. He's pastored in that area for 30 years. He knows it like the back of his hand, and so I have to trust his instincts and his sensibilities, and that takes a lot of finesse.
All right. Well, that's a good answer. It's a good one to end on, Reverend Phelps. I'm very happy to meet you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much, and I appreciate you doing this.
Hi, this is Alec Voles, co-host of the What Happens Next podcast on Louisville.am. We talk about improv each week with We Are the Louisville Improvisers. With Chris Anger and Brian Hines and Jenny.
Where's my water?
Okay. Well, right now we're just having a few treats. So we hope you can listen. Find us at Louisville.am in iTunes or using the Stitcher app on your iPhone or Android device.
And a big thank you to Reverend Joe Phelps for allowing me to come by and visit. The church there is at Grinstead and Cherokee. If you're so inclined, I would say you ought to go visit on Sunday. Reverend Joe Phelps, really appreciate him being on the show and addressing this all-important issue. Well, there's a lot more issues, as you know, if you follow this show. This is where I talk about some of the things in the news, and I just picked a handful of things that were of interest to me. I guess this first one, it was a surprise. The follies of our Metro Council members continue. This week, David Yates, the council president, was in the news about he apparently got in a fist fight, if you can believe it, a fist fight at a University of Louisville football game. Yates claims he was acting in self-defense, but the other party disputed that recollection, and it became a news story. The president of the Metro Council getting in a fist fight at a football game. Oh, well, that's nothing compared with the folly of our favorite Dan Johnson. Now, Dan is, as you may recall, he's in a lot of trouble because he is accused of fondling the buttocks of fellow council member Jessica Green at a photo shoot, if you can believe it. And later, the news of this prompted a legislative aide to Angela Leet, whose name is Aaron Henson, to come out and say, oh, yeah, last year he dropped his pants in front of me in the parking in the parking lot. All right. So Dan's already on photograph. So basically what happened was Green made this accusation. Johnson apologized, said he wouldn't run for office again in 2018. Let's hope he follows through with that, but I don't believe him. And but this week Johnson fights back. He's got a lawyer, and the lawyer says to Green and Henson that if you don't shut up about this, Dan's going to sue you for defamation and all sorts of other stuff. stuff. So Dan's threatening a lawsuit, but I mean, he's just, I don't know how else to say it, a buffoon. I can't believe that. Can you imagine what it's going to be like sitting in those council meetings or in the caucus meetings? If you're Dan Johnson, everybody's looking at you like you're some kind of creep that fondles women in public uninvited. And of course, Dan, if you know anything about his past, he always, you know, he's been in trouble a lot with similar things. The first big thing was a financial problem that he had. He was in hock to Gus Goldsmith, and there were all sorts of rumors about his financial problems. But these are sexual perversion problems. The Metro Council wisely is trying to construct a policy on this type of action, and Councilwoman Leet, who has been on this show, has said she's going to increase the security around her office just because of this creep Dan Johnson, who dropped his pants in a parking lot in front of one of her aides. I know it all sounds unbelievable, but that's what's going on right now with our elected officials right here in Louisville, Kentucky. Okay, one that's doing something good, Senator Morgan McGarvey, who's been on this show, is out this week saying his quote in the Courier Journal is, "It's 2017. It's time we start having a discussion about this without snickering. The topic is marijuana and medical marijuana. We're not quite last yet. Only 26 states have approved medical marijuana as being legal in their states for treatment of pain for people suffering that way. You know, there's a handful of states like Colorado, where my son Josh lives, in which recreational use of marijuana is legal, and you know, that's the worst thing that these rural Kentucky politicians could imagine ever happening to us, and that's what they think that this first step would lead to. Meanwhile, we're an embarrassment to in the United States in terms of our progressiveness on the subject of marijuana. Of course, our grounds, our fertile fields, would be ideal for marijuana. You know, the idea of the financial windfall that could come to the state to solve a lot of our problems, if only our politicians would come around a little bit. And the other topic that they do, I'm switching subjects here. This is a segue to Churchill Downs' announcement this week that they're going to rebuild the old Louisville Downs property, most recently known as I think Sports Spectrum or something like that, over there on Poplar Level Road, with the purpose of creating a place for people to go to bet on historical racing machines. Now, I really don't quite get that, but it's like they're only doing it because they can't get casino gambling passed, and Churchill Downs announced they were going to spend a boatload of money on this new project over there, and it's going to be interesting to see how that comes out. Yeah, I'll just say that, because I don't know that the opportunity to gamble on historical horse races is enough of an attraction to get me to go over there and wander around that facility. But we'll see. They certainly have plans to do it, and there's legislation still pending. Bevin, of course, being the kind of guy he is absolutely opposed to any sort of changes in gambling laws in Kentucky. So it's probably, you're right, not going to happen. Wow. So that's some news of the city and state. Some news of Rick. I'll tell you, there's stuff going on. I don't know if you're following Eat, Drink, Talk at all, but if you are, there's some great stories this week. I went to Matzo Pie, which is a brand new restaurant in Anchorage that it's a phenomenal story. You can read Steve Coombs' piece on it on eatdrinktalk.net. We're making some changes to that site, and you may have noticed that the podcast is on hiatus, or it's stopped for now. And I'll keep you posted on what's going to happen with Eat, Drink, Talk. But for now, you can see that, and you can see a story on the Butchertown Pizza Hall, which just opened this week. Long awaited down there in the old Hall's Cafeteria building in Butchertown. That's really going to be a great spot. Two pizza spots open in the same week. Isn't that great? All right, so that's available over there on Eat, Drink, Talk. My big thing of the last weekend, I went to the U2 show at Papa John's Cardinal Stadium. It was great. There were a lot of people there. It was not totally sold out, but spectacular visual show. I tell you, you know, we're so far away, you couldn't really see the guys in the band, but these were the biggest screens I think I'd ever seen. And the guys in U2, they're smart. They had some very creative ways to present their material, And it was just an outstanding show. And the best thing about it was, now all you people that paid full price for tickets, don't get mad, but I'm giving you some advice that may be useful to you for future shows. And that is, I've discovered that if you are, if you have the willingness to want to go to a show and are willing to wait until the last minute to get tickets, it's almost always true that on StubHub or Ticketmaster or any of those sites, you can get them for really cheap. I waited. I bought my tickets to U2 about 4 hours before the show started. And the face value of the tickets, I think most of my friends paid some $120 to $150. I paid $20 apiece for two tickets. And I was able to sit right next to the people that were, you know, paying higher prices. So anyway, a little bit of advice. Now, if it's somebody you really, really want to see and you've waited all your life to see them, like a lot of people were for you too, I suggest you make sure and get your tickets early. But if, you know, if it's not that big a deal, but you'd like to go, wait till the last minute. Wait till the last minute. Go on StubHub because you can download the tickets onto your phone. You don't have to go home and print them or anything like that. It's really great. U2 is a great show. I wish they had more shows up at Papa John's. It's a great venue. The weather was perfect. All that stuff. I spent my Father's Day on the golf course, and the remarkable story there, other than the fact that my score was not as good as my son Luke's, is that I came within inches of a hole-in-one on a par 3. Hole, 126 yards, 8 iron. My ball landed 6 inches from the hole, bounced up, hit the pin, and rolled and stopped 12 inches away. So close, but it was a lot of fun. Great time out on the golf course. We played Quail Chase, which is a beautiful course. It's very well maintained. It's public. Anybody can play it. So they had a big special. They had a special pricing for Father's Day as well. So it's a big ball. A lot of fun. So that's what's going on there. So that's what's sort of happening in my life. I want to get on to my next guest, who is Drew Curtis. And Drew Curtis, I met him for the first time the other day. We went down to I was down to Genscape, where the Louisville Digital Association was having Drew as a speaker. Drew was doing FARC.com. I think he started in the 90s. Believe it or not, it was supposedly the first independent website of that type to make $1 million. And even though Drew takes a modest salary, he is a very smart guy and is really into the technology side of things. He talks about his new book in the interview. He's got a new book coming out next spring, and his first book sold lots and lots of copies. So I think you'll be interested to hear this interview with Drew Curtis. I found it a lot of fun and very interesting to do. So enjoy that. I'll be back to close the show.
Hey, this is Dan Vonderhyde.
Stephanie White.
And we are 40-ish.
Yeah, I'm getting there.
We talk about it every week on the 40-ish podcast. What do we talk about?
Wisdom. We drop some wisdom and just everything that's going on in our lives that relates to what might be going on in yours.
We have guests. We talk to people on the street. We're dropping knowledge all over the place. You can hear it every Wednesday. Comes out on Louisville.am.
All right, today I am with a man I guess a lot of people in Louisville know from running for governor, Drew Curtis. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
You're more famous, though, for FARC.
Right.
What, tell me, for listeners that don't know, what's FARC all about?
Yeah, so it's basically, it's my website. It's a web community that's been around for about 18 and a half years now at this point, so it can vote. and it's the easiest way to explain it is, it's what if the Daily Show ran the Drudge Report.
Okay. Okay, and it is funny. I can vouch for that. But it consists of links to news stories brought to the service by the people out in your community, right?
Yeah, it's a curated sort of aggregation where, unlike Reddit, where people can vote stuff up, you can't on my site. But on the other hand, if it's good, we'll put it up. And the reason why that matters is because sometimes things that are important or interesting don't get seen by enough people to make it to the main.
You can't leave it up to the public. They're too dumb, right?
Well, but for the most part, yeah. I mean, or generally speaking, it's like all of us are smarter than the rest of us, provided that somebody is there to provide a framework. You know, there's wisdom in crowds, but good luck finding it. That's kind of how I put it.
Well, that was very interesting. Now, I also read that FARC was the first, but tell me what it was. It was the first online website to make $1 million?
I saw that was in a Washington Post article that was written in 2006, and that was so long ago I forgot. I don't know if it was the first or not, so I can't necessarily claim that. But, I mean, we got there, so it worked out pretty well.
Well, that's good. And you also, not to go over the whole thing that I read, but take a modest salary.
Yeah.
Right? You're not banking all that millions into your
own. I live in Kentucky where I can do that. That's actually a more unbelievable statement for people who live in California, because you know their minimum wage is like $250,000 a year, so yeah. they find that shocking. But now it's more just kind of like it's all about dumping the resources back into the thing to make sure that it works and functions, and it has for now 18 and a half years.
Okay, 18 and a half years. Now tell me what part 18 and a half years in, you're not like reading every story and doing all that. What's your role?
Oh, I kind of am, actually. I took a couple years off and let other people pick it, but it turned out that it was kind of something I did anyway. And okay. It turned out that when I did it, it worked better. So for the last couple of years, it was really 2 years ago, we rebuilt the admin interface to work on the iPhone, and now I just run it wherever I happen to be.
Okay.
So I am doing it. And what's nice is when I started doing that again, all of a sudden I knew everything again. So, which is infuriating for friends of mine when they say, like, hey, did you see the story about it? And I'm like, yes, I totally saw the story about that.
Yeah, but and the thing that I guess is I understand why it's so popular, but it's like about snakes coming out of car hoods.
Yeah.
I think I saw that today. What crazy thing Trump did today.
No, I mean, we've got that on there too, but made sort of a conscious decision after the election to sort of sequester the political stuff like off the main page.
Okay.
Because there's a segment of the population that just sort of suffering from PTSD on that, and they can't stand to see it anymore. In the meantime, we're not hiding it. We're just basically putting it in its own area. So if that's what you're here for, go nuts. But it's over there.
Go over there. Yeah. Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about politics. You ran for governor.
Yes.
I'm always interested in the motivation of people. I know I'm not going to insult you here. You didn't have a chance to win.
No.
But why did you run?
So it started out basically, it was a discussion with a friend of mine about how like there aren't any quality people running for office, and then basically they challenged me to do it, and I said I don't want to, and they said, well, if you won't do it, who will? And I was like, okay, that's a good point. So I'm surprisingly not that interested in politics. And I've discovered, too, that when I talk to people who are, I mean, even like political science experts, I don't think about this the same way they do. Like, not at all. Like, they have this sort of framework and this continuum of ways that things work. And I'm completely outside the process, and I disagree with a lot of their mechanisms. I feel like they're observing things wrong. Mm-hmm. It's more like it's like feng shui. It's like it seems like there ought to be something to it, but nobody can prove it. And political science is stacked up with that. Like there's an election in Georgia today, and depending on who wins, whichever side wins is going to claim some kind of meaningful mandate out of this, when reality is just maybe 35 extra people showed up.
I'm embarrassed to tell you I wasted 30 minutes of my life watching like CNN talk about that Georgia election today. You must have learned something from running this campaign. What was that like?
So it was fascinating. One thing was that I sort of tried to blow out all of the things you weren't supposed to do. Like I actually had a guy write me like a 4-page email when I launched the campaign, who was an expert, or he said, and he probably was, in campaigning. And he gave me this long, long, long list of things that I was doing wrong, most of which there was no way I was going to change.
Yeah.
So I just kind of went around, and one of the ones was that you said you're coming off as too smart, and that's a problem. And what I found out was, case in point, people don't care if you come off too smart, but somebody actually nailed it down for me. It was actually a guy in West Louisville I ran into who said he'd met Ben Carson.
Uh-huh.
And he said, you guys are both smart. Ben Carson is actually intelligent. It's hard to tell based on things that come out of his mouth.
Right.
But he is a brain surgeon, so we got to give him some credit there. But he said, talking to you is different than talking to Ben Carson. He said, Ben Carson tries to make you feel like you're inferior to him. He's okay. Like, and you don't. And that's the difference. You can talk intelligently to people. And the thing I would do, and I would be like, they would say they'd want to talk about a specific issue. And some of them I had really nailed down, like, the pension problem, which we don't want to talk about because it just takes forever and it's boring. But I could literally say, like, to what level of granularity do you want? Do you want to just ask me, do I have a solution? The answer is yes. Or would you like the spreadsheet that I wrote that has it on there? Or anywhere in between. Or if you want to explain some part of the process, you tell me where you're at. We'll start there.
Yeah, well, it's like me saying, how are you going to fix health care?
Yeah, right? Exactly, yeah.
it's a longer story than that you're able to get into. Well, switching gears here real quick. I know you wrote a book that sold a lot of copies, and now you're working on a second book, right?
Yeah, and usually you don't take 10 years in between, but I literally did not have a better idea. I mean, I wanted to write a sort of a scathing history of why Florida is so screwed up, but they were afraid nobody would buy that, but it was.
You should talk to Dave Barry or Hyacinth about that.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, they already know. I mean, hell, Barry made a career off it. But at any rate, So the idea sort of came out of the current book idea came out of the political campaign. Initially, I was thinking about writing up the experiences on it. And what we found out was, more or less, like, I have learned a lot, but unless you're thinking about going to end up running off for office yourself, probably not going to read it. Like, it's not sort of, this isn't a anybody would grab it type thing. But I still talk to people about it. But what it morphed into was conversations that I'd been having with my friend Adam Savage about, and this has been going on for way, way longer than just the political campaign, about sure. what the next 10 years are going to bring going forward and how these technologies are going to play out. And I would talk to people about them during the campaign, and what I kept on getting was, you know, driverless cars I'd mentioned, and they're like, well, we don't want to talk about that. And I'm like, why not? And they go, well, because that's like, first of all, is it possible? Second of all, they're like, isn't it going to be a long way away? And meanwhile, I mean, I go to Silicon Valley all the time, and if you want to see a driverless car, just wait 5 minutes because they go by all the time. There's 30 companies actively roaming these things around in the streets. They're so common, people don't notice them anymore.
Wow.
And to realize that, like, you know, especially thinking about, like, what could make Kentucky better. And one of them would be if we could get everybody, like, if we could just jump a generation of technology understanding. It's acceptance, actually, not understanding. You don't need to know how a driverless car works to believe that they're going to be here imminently.
Right.
And that's the only thing you got to bridge. The minute you do that, all of a sudden laws start changing, policies start changing, the way we think about the way that we're going to go forward for the next 5 years starts changing. And all you have to do is just accept that one statement as fact, and you're good to go. And so we started thinking about, okay, well, what else, what other technologies do have similar things in play? And that's where this book sort of came from.
Okay. Got another one besides cars?
Yeah, so the main ones we discussed in the book, there's seven major ones. Six haven't happened yet. One already did. The one that already did was the end of privacy. And that chapter is in there because this is why it matters. Because if we do nothing, we're screwed. And the end of privacy is about how we lost it. And come to find a lot of people don't realize that we did and to what extent.
Yeah, well, you know? I guess I'm among those. I didn't know we lost privacy.
Yeah, it's so bad right now that I could buy your current location and mood.
You could buy it.
I can buy that. I can buy your current location and mood, and they're not even tracking you all the time. They just can extrapolate that. If you want to see an example of this in motion, next time you drive down the interstate, pull up Facebook, check the ads out.
Yeah, they're all about
you get hungry, here around. Comes food. Like, it's literally the minute you get hungry. Now, how they know this is a little bit different. I mean, they're more or less guessing, but they're guessing well. So they don't, like, know, but it's close enough.
I know the day after I buy something on Amazon.
Well, that's different. That's the previous model, the one that's broken where you buy something and then the ads chase you around for, like, a week. Yeah, that's how it used to work. Now they're getting to the point where they're able to anticipate it. And I may talk about that a little bit here later on. So that's the one that got away. But the technologies that we're sort of centering around are driverless cars, 3D printing, drone warfare, de-extinction, asteroid mining, and immortality. All of these things will happen in the next 10 to 20 years, most of them in the next five.
Yeah. Well, drones. It seemed like I saw a story about drones the other day that the inmates in a prison were using them.
Yeah, they were flying contraband in and out. Yeah.
I guess that was probably on FARC.
Yeah, it probably was, actually, because I've seen it. Yeah, or, you know, the issue with, like, everybody's making fun of Trump's dumbass wall because they drone stuff in all the time already.
Yeah.
There's drone submarines bringing stuff in by the crate load. It's not an effective way to stop it. So the drone warfare one's really interesting because the overarching theme of that chapter is basically is that sometimes the big disruptive change is not what you think it's going to be. Like, the jury is actually still out. There's a very good argument to be made that drone warfare is actually not going to be anything substantially new.
Right.
There's also an argument that says it will be, and I could go over both, but it turns out that where the deeper ramifications of this technology lie in the agriculture sector and what they're doing with drones there. And it's all just cast off military technology, second generation going to them.
Wow.
And they're starting to do, like, per plant nutrient farming.
All right, so this book has got a title, and it's coming out next year.
Yeah, it's called Don't Give Guns to Robots.
Don't Give Guns to Robots.
Yeah.
Good advice.
And it's about not giving guns to robots.
Okay. And what was your first – tell me about the first book. It's still in print?
Yeah, it's still – so it's called It's Not News, It's FARC, How Mass Media Passes Off Crap as News. And it's basically about that. But what was funny was that I didn't know. So I just literally wrote, okay, I think this is how this probably works. And it turns out by complete accident, not only did I nail it – but I also nailed the next 10 years. Like, I actually said in there, like, here's what I think is going to happen. And it was exactly what happened.
Wow.
So I can't take credit. Like, I didn't know. I was just like, they asked me, what do you think? I'm like, okay, here's what I think. And it turns out I got it right. which doesn't always happen, by the way. So, well, but that it did then.
That's a good prognosis for your next book that predicts the future. So,
yeah.
So we'll see how that happens. But you're from, I should say, this is a Louisville-based show, but you live in Lexington, right?
Versailles, actually. Versailles? I usually tell people Lexington because I hate having that conversation about why do we pronounce it Versailles. So I tell people Lexington.
We won't have that now.
Yeah, okay. And I was born in Lexington, so that's pretty close enough. I mean, it works.
Okay. Did the run for governor solve your get your need to be in politics out of your system?
You know what's weird is this is me not being a part of the process. A lot of people who do it say they get addicted to it. But remember, I already run a community that has a million people in it, and they all love me, not half of them. So I already got that in my life. Like if I had a need for it, it's being taken care of. No, I'm not addicted to it. In fact, I'm just still kind of like mad that I'm probably going to get dragged in again because there's literally nobody else good out there trying it. And if it was up to me, I would rather see amazing candidates and not even have to take a shot at it. But there's just nobody's out there doing it. And so, again, this is just kind of my personality. It's like, nobody will, I will. But I would love 5 or 10 years down the road to have so many new awesome people doing it that I could go and do something way more interesting.
Well, there you go. Well, I'd love to see you run it. Even if it was for the Versailles City Council or whatever, it seems like you're cut out for it.
Yeah, well, we'll see how it goes. But, yeah,